fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Marvelous Monday to you. Welcome to the show. So glad to have you with me. Hey, guess what? It's a hashtag Maverick Monday, of course, as it always is on The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. But it's also a hashtag Mailbag Monday. Yep, we're going to be dipping into the mailbag in just a moment to answer your questions. We've got some pretty good ones today. Can't wait to jump into it. And if you want to call in, if you didn't get a chance to email, you can always email the show at cale@relevantradio.com. Don't forget that. But you can also call in if you have a question, a burning issue that you want to get answered. We'll try to get you on the air. 1-888-914-9149 is the studio number to call. Patrick Alog is standing by to take your call. 1-888-914-9149. Or you could try tweeting at me, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Or you can try the show account as well, at Cale Clark Show. That's always a good one, too. So I want to jump right in, and Lucas, we need like some sort of an opening sound effect for, you know, opening the mailbag. What do you think? You got something for me there?
I've got something for you, Caleb.
Oh, cool.
Tell me if you recognize this.
Okay.
You've got mail.
I do recognize that, and that is from about 100 years ago, I think. That's the AOL time, is it not?
You got it. Yeah, that's AOL.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I don't know. There's probably people out there who listen, I don't want to... You know, embarrass my parents here, but my parents actually use AOL. They're huge,
so
heavy AOL users.
Okay, so I got to be honest, Cale. I actually still have an AOL email, also.
Lucas, that's embarrassing. That's really embarrassing. You're not even like over 30 years old yet. You know, and
okay, here's the thing. All of us have those email accounts we use that we give people.
Right.
When we sign up for things, but
when
we don't like
12.
Really want them to contact us.
Oh, I see. Like a burner email account.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, you better hang on to that AOL account, Lucas, in case that friend that you had in the sixth grade decides they want to get back to you. But anyways, I'll start calling you Lucas the Luddite from now on, I think. But anyways, okay, let's get into the actual questions. Let's get into the questions, shall we? So the first one comes to us from Christine, who is listening in Minneapolis, Minnesota on 1330 AM WLOL. WLOL, you know, they could certainly make a meme out of that these days, but I don't know if they planned it that way. Anyway, so here's the question. It's about communion. And Christine says, "Hi, Cale. Our bishop requests that we receive communion in the hand. I was advised to come up for a blessing if I didn't want to receive on the hand. Should I do so out of respect for the bishop's order, or refrain from the line to receive and stay in the pew, or stay at home and make a spiritual communion? I had started receiving on the tongue after deepening my faith in Jesus and his truth, his divinity in the Eucharist." Okay, so thank you very much for that question, Christine, and thanks for listening in Minneapolis on 1330 AM WLOL. And it's a serious question. There's nothing to LOL about on that question, and that's a strained attempt at humor once again by me, another bad dad joke. But it's a serious question. It's a good one. And obviously, I'm not sure who your bishop is, but I'm assuming that this has to do with COVID-19, and it's a safety precaution that the bishop is trying to bring forth, and that's why he's not allowing communion on the tongue. Now, I would just say, here's what I would do. You're obviously free to make up your own mind. You have your own mind, and you've got to be convinced in your own mind, as St. Paul says. But obviously, my preference is to receive on the tongue, if at all possible. That is the universal norm of the church. However, in these times, many bishops have decided that only communion in the hand will be offered at public masses due to the risk of transmission of COVID. So you're basically asking, should I receive in the hand or not at all? That's basically your choice at this point. Now, if you are of the mind that I don't want to receive unless it's on the tongue, I'd rather not receive at all. Okay, here's what I would do. I mean, I'm receiving on the hand right now. This is the only choice I have too in the archdiocese where I live. And I'd rather receive Jesus on the hand than not at all. That's just my point of view. Because I need Jesus, I need to receive the Eucharist as frequently as possible because I need help, you know, and I love Christ, I want to be united with him in the Eucharist. as much as possible. Is it necessarily ideal? No. However, I'd rather receive Jesus on the hand than not at all. That's just my point of view. You might disagree with that. But that's kind of where I stand. Now, some people are of the mind that, you know, I am absolutely not going to receive unless it's on the tongue. Okay, that's fine. I mean, that's your choice that you're making. But that's not the choice that I'm making. So I would say, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to think about this. I'll tell you this. I got pressed into duty a couple times as an extraordinary minister of the Eucharist. This is a bit of an aside, but it might be worth telling the story. I really didn't want to do that. I mean, lecturing, no problem. I'm happy to do that. I personally think that the use of extraordinary ministers is in most cases uncalled for, and it's a liturgical abuse. Like making Mass go faster is not really a good reason to have extraordinary ministers, especially at a daily Mass when there's usually not that many people there. It usually doesn't take that much longer to distribute communion. But anyways, that's just my point of view on it. But I did get pressed into duty a few times because the priest at a particular parish where I was going for daily Mass, he knew me well. He's like, listen, I really need help on this particular day. Will you do it? I'm like, all right, I'll do it. And I have to tell you, despite my best efforts to try to use proper technique, there are times when people, you know, they'll like lick your hand. Okay, I don't want to be gross or anything like that, but you just never know what's going to happen. And I've had, you know, priest friends tell me that, you know, one guy told me that there was this lady that was wearing just a copious amounts of lipstick, and he came away with like a chunk of lipstick on his hand, you know, after giving this lady communion on the tongue. So despite our best efforts of trying to use proper technique, and of course, ideally, you should never make contact with a person's tongue. Sometimes their tongue wants to make contact with you. Let's put it that way. And so, yeah, it would be easy in this situation for germs or, you know, possible viruses to be passed on. So I do understand why the bishops have chosen this for now. I'm sure most of them aren't happy about it either. But there you have it. That's my take on that. So thanks for your question, Christine. That was a really interesting one for sure. All right. So let's go to the next one as we continue to download our AOL emails, Lucas. I can't believe that. But anyways, this is an anonymous question. And this anonymous listener is listening again in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So, hey, Twin Cities representing right now. Once again, that same station, 1330 AM WLOL. So thanks for listening to Relevant Radio. And the subject is about spiritual laziness. That's the subject of the question. The question is this: Hi, Cale. I don't understand the difference between spiritual laziness and not knowing what to do. I retired early at the age of 52 because we can financially have me do this, but I feel lost as to what I should be doing. Thank you, Anonymous. Okay, well, to that anonymous listener, and I hope you're listening right now, there's no way I can possibly email you or tell you that your question is being on air because you're anonymous. But anyways, having said that, I should have put my phone on vibrate. I apologize, America. There you go. Someone is trying to call me. Stop calling me. Stop calling me. All right. Okay, I think they're gone. All right. Sorry about that. How unprofessional of me. Anyways, so the question was about spiritual laziness. I think this is because of the show that we had the other day on Acedia. We were looking at an article by Father Harrison Eyre in which he was talking about Acedia, or sloth as it's often known in the West, and how that can really take two forms. This sort of temptation to do nothing, to be slothful, to waste one's time. Or it can manifest in excessive busyness and never getting around to the things that one ought to be doing. In other words, it's the failure to do the duty of the moment. And this person has emailed saying, listen, I'm retired early at 52, and it's financially possible for me to do this. I don't have to work right now. Maybe this person's company, you know, gave him a buyout plan. Who knows? But he feels a little bit lost as to what he should be doing right now. And he's wondering if he's sort of spiritually lazy. I think this is a common problem, especially among men. When men stop working, they often don't know what to do with themselves. And Part of it is because for a lot of guys, they identify themselves so much with their work that when they're not working anymore, it just they lose their identity in so many ways. They identify themselves a lot by what they do. And even, we all do this to some extent. When we meet somebody for the first time, especially if we really don't know what to talk about or, how to get a conversation going, we'll start by asking them, oh, what do you do? What do you do? As if you can be defined by your job or your profession. That's a big part of our lives for sure, but it's not who we are. We are followers of Christ. We are children of God by virtue of our baptism. However, our work does take up a big part of our lives and a big part of what we put our energy into. And so when that isn't happening anymore, our professional work, it stands to reason that a lot of guys, struggle with that. And some of them actually become depressed when they're not working. And so I think the key is if we all have to work at some level. This is part of our creation call as men and women. When God placed Adam in the garden, he placed him there to till it and to keep it. That was his actual work. And it was his worship as well, because those words in Hebrew, to till and to keep the garden in Genesis, those are the same words that are used of the priest in service at the temple in the Old Testament. So work is worship in so many ways, no matter what our profession is. And so in a sense, God created, man to work just as he created birds to fly. And that goes for, of course, women as well. It's humanity in general. So if you're not working at your professional occupation anymore because you've quote unquote retired, now some people choose never to retire, which is fine, or they retire on their own terms, but you've got to do something. You have to do some work, I think, in order not to feel that way. And that work could be anything. It could be volunteering. It doesn't mean you have to get paid for it. It could be helping out your local parish, teaching catechism classes. It could be any number of things, in the community service that you could be doing. So I think number one, that would be one thing I would look to do is try to look for someplace you can serve and be of use. And that'll, give a lot back to you as well. It's far more blessed to give than to receive, to give your time, your talents, your treasure. And so that's maybe you could become a relevant radio ambassador in your parish. That's a great way to spread the good word of the gospel as well. So you could do that. And I think also a second thing I would say is try to keep a schedule, because especially when this happens, even when we're working and we go on vacation, let's say, if we're on personal time off, our schedule is not the same. And we can quite easily get into modes of wasting time. So make a schedule. And it might sound crazy, but make it down to the minute. I like to break my schedule down, if possible, by half-hour blocks. And so you kind of know. And you can schedule in your leisure time as well. But make sure that you have time for the big-ticket items, for prayer, going to daily Mass if you can. If you're not working professionally anymore, it's a great opportunity to try to go to daily Mass if you can. If you weren't able to do that because of your work before. So make time for prayer. Make time for leisure, of course. And try to schedule some time for some activity where you could be useful. And hey, you can always take up golf, right? And I would totally do that. When I visit my parents are snowbirds. They haven't been down to Florida this year, of course, because the border's been closed with COVID. But I see the way people live down there, and they're just playing golf in the daytime. And hey, that sounds pretty good to me, I have to confess. I'd be working all right. I'd be working on my short game. I'd be working on my wedge game. But anyways, it's kind of funny. It's when you become older, it's almost like you become a kid again. My parents live in this retirement community when they go down to Florida. And it's funny because most of them don't even like drive their cars anymore. They literally get on these like big tricycles and they ride to their friends' houses and they play cards and stuff. It's just like being a kid again. It's unbelievable. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're opening up the Monday mailbag today. But if you have a phone question, you can always call us. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call if you'd rather call than write, because writing takes time, of course. It might be easier just to talk. So call me, 1-888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. So anyways, hopefully to that anonymous listener, hopefully that helped at some level to answer your question. All right, so let's go to the next one in the mailbag. We're going to open up this one, and this one comes to us from Miley And Miley is listening in Los Angeles, California on 930 AM KHJ. So thank you, Miley, for listening to the show. And, oh, you know what? I'm going to do that one later because that's a big one. I'm going to do that one later. I'm going to skip to the next one. Sorry, Miley. I'll come back to you, I promise, because I don't have time to get into that, but I will later. So let's go to Robert. Robert Roland is emailing from Madera, California. And Robert is listening on 1250 AM KHOT. And here, this is an interesting question. It's about burial in a military cemetery. Now, the other day on the 11th, on Veterans Day, we did our salute to service on the Cale Clark Show. And I want to let everybody know, we said that we would pray for the names of all your deceased relatives and friends who had served in the military. And also, those who are now currently serving, we weren't able to get all the names on the air because a lot of them came in through email afterwards, but we did pray for all of them. I did personally pray for all of the people whose names that you gave to me. So once again, thank you for those messages and thank you for your service for all who have served and who are serving right now. And so Robert emails and he has served, I believe, in the Navy. He says this, I understand that Catholics are encouraged / required to be buried or interred on consecrated ground. As a Navy veteran, I'm eligible to be buried in a national cemetery for military veterans. Does the church make allowances for someone like me to be buried in a national cemetery? If you don't know the answer to this, could you please kick this around with others or tell me who to ask, as one never knows the day or the hour, and the clock is ticking for me. Thank you. By the way, I like your style. I didn't at first, but now that I've listened to you a bit, I'm really warming up to your work. Many thanks and much love to you and all at Relevant Radio. Regards, Robert. Thank you, Robert, for that. I appreciate that. And hey, I'm not offended at all when you say, hey, I didn't like your style at first. I like it now, but I didn't like it at first. But now that I've listened to you a bit, I'm really warming up to your work. I appreciate that very much. I really appreciate that, Robert. And I always say to people, you know, if you listen to the show and you're just not sure about it, you just don't get it, give it 2 weeks. Give it 2 weeks. And if you're still like, I don't like it, then that's fine. You can move along. But give it 2 weeks. You need some time to kind of marinate in it. See what it's like. It's a little bit different from some other stuff that you hear. I do appreciate you and all the other listeners. And thanks for writing in, Robert. Now, and thank you for your service as well as a Navy veteran. That's amazing. And it's an important question because he's saying that as a Catholic, I was told that you need to be buried on consecrated ground or interred on consecrated ground. So military veterans are sometimes able to be buried in these national cemeteries for military veterans. So can he do that? He's asking if he can make plans to do that. Well, I found an answer about this, and I'm glad that this question was asked because I didn't know the answer to this myself. So I did a little bit of research, and Father Kenneth Doyle from Philadelphia answered this question by saying this, and this is an interesting point. A Catholic can actually be buried wherever he or she chooses. So that's interesting to know. Okay, if you didn't know that, a Catholic can be buried wherever he or she chooses. So you can choose to be buried in a Catholic cemetery. You could be buried. You could be married and buried. Yeah, we marry them, we bury them, everything in between. You can be buried in a non-Catholic or non-sectarian burial plot. So for example, in just sort of a public cemetery. Or you could also choose to be buried if you are someone who has served in the military and you qualify in a national cemetery where military veterans are honored. Now, this priest is saying that the preference for him would be a Catholic burial ground because in Catholic burial grounds, the deceased have the benefit of having masses and prayers regularly offered for people who are buried there. So that's something that goes on all the time at Catholic cemeteries. So that's an important thing to, you know, in their favor for sure. But you can choose to be buried in a military cemetery if you would like. And the reason why a lot of people are confused about this, by the way, is because of something that's in the church's canon law. In the church's code of canon law, in canon 1180, it says this, if a parish has its own cemetery, the deceased members of the faithful must be buried in it unless the deceased or those competent to take care of the burial have chosen another cemetery legitimately. So this is where people get confused because when they read If a parish has its own cemetery, the deceased must be buried in it. So the word must, people see that, oh, okay, I have to be buried in, you know, on my parish burial grounds. Well, the reason why that word is there is because that is for the parish. That's not for the deceased person. So that is to say that if there is room in the parish's burial ground, and if the parishioner's family chooses that option, wants the person to be buried there, then the parish must do it. They are obligated to honor that request. But again, if you read that canon 1180, it goes on in the following paragraph to say, everyone, however, is permitted to choose the cemetery of burial unless prohibited by law. So you can choose to be buried in a non-Catholic cemetery. Now, with respect to this idea of consecrated ground, whatever a Catholic is buried in a non-Catholic cemetery plot, the priest who officiates at the burial, at the committal, when the person is buried in the ground, says a prayer that actually blesses that gravesite. So in a sense, it does become consecrated ground, in a sense, because the gravesite is blessed by a priest. Now, again, in a Catholic cemetery, there are masses and prayers being offered there on the regular, okay? So that there is a difference there. But you do have that option. So if you would prefer to be buried in a military cemetery, you can choose that. So thanks, Robert, for that question. Really appreciate that. And that is it for now, because we've got to take a quick break. But we will be back on the Cale Clark Show. Give us a call, 1-888-914-9149 on Relevant Radio.
The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Want to give me a call? It's 1-888-914-9149. We have just dipped into the Monday mailbag. Want to get to some other things, though, that I've got to get to. First of all, today is the feast day of St. Margaret of Scotland. And I got to tell you, I didn't know that much about her, so I had to do a little bit of research. And Franciscan Media has a good little piece on her. And she was really not Scottish by birth, which a lot of people don't know, St. Margaret of Scotland. She was actually the daughter of Princess Agatha of Hungary and the Anglo-Saxon Prince Edward Atheling. And she spent a lot of her youth in the court of her great uncle, the English king, Edward the Confessor. All right, you probably heard of him. But her family had to flee from William the Conqueror and was shipwrecked off the coast of Scotland. That's how she got there. And King Malcolm of Scotland befriended them, and he was just captivated by the beauty of Margaret. And she was just so gracious, and she actually was a very refined individual. And he really lucked out by marrying her, and she helped him a great deal. So they were married at the castle of Dunfermline in the year 1070. Now, King Malcolm was really good-hearted, but he was a little bit rough, a little bit uncultured, as was his country at the time. No offense to anyone who's Scottish. The great Scot Sean Connery, one of my favorites, so I'm not anti-Scot by any stretch of the imagination. But anyways, because of Malcolm's love for Margaret, she was able to kind of, you know, soften his rough edges quite a bit. And she was able to kind of get him to calm his temper down, polish up his manners, and help him to become, in general, a more virtuous person and king. And he wound up leaving all domestic affairs to her, and he often consulted her in state matters, you know, so she was really, in many ways, the power behind the throne. And she tried to improve her adopted country, St. Margaret did, by promoting the arts and education. And so she encouraged religious reform, she encouraged synods to take place, and there were, unfortunately at the time, you know, throughout church history, this is not the only time when, you know, clerics were not living right, okay? So she tried to correct some of the religious abuses that were common to her day among priests and lay people, such as simony, you know, selling of spiritual, you know, goods for money, usury, incestuous marriages. I hate to mention these things, but that's the kind of thing that was going on at that time. And along with her husband, she actually also founded a lot of churches in Scotland. She had 6 sons and 2 daughters with Malcolm. So she was not only a queen, but also a mom. You could say she's the queen mother of Scotland. And she personally took care of their religious education and their other studies. And she was a very detached person, even though she was queen, even though she probably could have taken advantage of her status, she remained detached from the world. And she was a very austere person in her private life. She would keep to a schedule. We talked earlier about the importance of keeping to a schedule. She was really strict with her schedule in terms of keeping time for prayer and also for reading scripture. She was really temperate when it came to food. Didn't actually eat that much. She ate sparingly and she slept, you know, probably not a full night's sleep each night. Why? Because she wanted to have more time for prayer. So she would often, you know, get up earlier, maybe go to bed a little bit later and use that extra time for extra prayer. She actually kept 2 Lents along with her husband, King Malcolm. So they lived 1 Lent, which is the normal period of Lent before Easter, and they would kind of turn Advent into another sort of Lenten season, if you will, of penance before Christmas time. And she used to go to midnight mass during these occasions of the pre-Christmas and pre-Easter periods. And when she was on the way home from mass, she would actually go and visit the poor, wash their feet, and give them alms. She never refused a beggar who approached her in public. And she never sat down to eat without first feeding 9 orphans and 24 adults. So there you have it. Anyways, she died in the year 1093. King William Rufus made a surprise attack on Alnwick Castle. King Malcolm and his oldest son Edward were killed in the battle. And Margaret, who was already dying at that point, she did pass away 4 days after her husband. Excuse me. So what's interesting is that in this reflection on Franciscan media pointed out there's a kind of a clean way and a messy way to get involved, you know, in terms of giving. And the clean way is simply just to give money, right? And it's always easier to cut a check. And maybe it's not easy for some people to cut a check because, you know, a lot of people, they're very attached to their funds. And we appreciate, I mean, here at Relevant Radio, we appreciate donations for people on our, we wouldn't be on the air without donations from listeners. And in fact, we just got through an incredible pledge drive, or Join the Family pledge drive, which just ended a couple weeks ago. And it was incredibly successful. So we thank you for your generosity. And there are, of course, organizations that do a lot of fine work in terms of sharing the gospel and also serving the poor. And of course, the hands-on way, the messy way, quote-unquote, to serve is to get involved personally. You know, go to a soup kitchen, you know, get involved with the street ministry, actually get your hands dirty serving. And sometimes that gives you a totally different perspective for sure. And St. Margaret of Scotland used to do that a lot. One of her outstanding virtues, of course, was her love of the poor. She was also someone who visited the sick personally and would actually care for them, nurse them personally with her own hands. She served orphans and the poor, washed their feet, as I talked about before. So very much like Christ, you know, got involved in people's lives and wasn't, you know, content with just platitudes and nice things, you know, sayings and pronouncements, but she actually was willing to serve. And all the more rare is that, you know, attitude among royals. Like, she could have easily been, you know, in her ivory tower, as it were, but she wasn't. So really, really good saint for today, St. Margaret of Scotland. Please pray for us, St. Margaret. All right, we're going to go to the phones right now. We're going to go to Liz, who's calling from Excelsior, Minnesota. Liz, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, thank you. Good, thanks.
Great.
My question is, the gospel reading had to do with our talents,
mm-hmm,
in regards to what we do with them.
Mm-hmm.
Would the acedia type of conversation you had last week, would that really tie in with the how we use, when we're slothing, are we not using the talents God gave us? That's the question, I guess.
Yeah, well, first of all, I got to say, that's an interesting town that you're calling from, Excelsior, Minnesota. It kind of reminds me of Stan Lee, you know, from Marvel Comics. Excelsior, he always used to sign off that way. So it's a great town. And thank you for that call, Liz. Yeah, so you're referring, obviously, to the Sunday gospel reading about the parable of the talents. And yeah, that's always one that gets my attention. You know, it's one of those sayings in the Gospels, this parable of the talents, that really, you know, causes all of us to question, you know, are we really, you know, maximizing the gifts that God has given us? And he wants return on his investment. He's given us all some talents, right? Nobody can say, oh, I don't have any talents or I don't have any abilities. He has given us talents and abilities. And so he wants us to use those things for his glory, and not just, they could be any kind of talents. They could be physical gifts. They could be, you know, the ability to work with one's hands, the ability to actually, some people are great at, you know, in the financial end of things, you know, and they have the ability to make money. They're very great with that, and they can glorify God with that. There's no such thing as a job that can't be sanctified. Any job, any honest profession can be sanctified and can be ordered to the glory of God. So we have physical gifts that we've been given. We have intellectual gifts we've been given. We have natural talents that we have, and we've got to use all those things to glorify God. And so, yeah, it's again, I think to me, it always comes down, Liz, to stewardship, this whole question of stewardship, you know, our time, our talents, and our treasures. What are we doing with these things? How are we trying to grow them and multiply them so we have a better impact for Christ? And this is what we're going to be judged on at the end of the day. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, it's not necessarily a salvation issue, but it is an issue of discipleship and faithfulness to the Master. So, I don't know if that answers your question, Liz. So,
yeah, well, that gets into then slothing, because if you're slothing, you're not taking it to the next level of doing what God's purpose is for you on earth.
Well, right, yeah. So, because one of the
when
things
you talked about slothing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And acedia, and that's right. Yeah, you did mention that at the beginning, and so that's part of the whole stewardship of time thing, is, you know, making sure that we're fulfilling the duty of the moment, and that's not always easy. That's not always easy, and sometimes it's downright heroic, you know, to have to do what you should be doing at that moment. It can be difficult. And we're always tempted to do the easier thing, and so yeah, I think that has to do with stewardship of time when it comes to that angle. So yeah, it's definitely a great gospel to pray about and think about and reflect on, and ask God for help to live it out better.
Yeah, I really enjoy your program. So thank you. Thanks for bringing insight to the Catholic Church.
Well, that's very kind of you, Liz. I really appreciate that. Please pray for me and everybody else here at Relevant Radio. And thank you for listening. That was Liz calling from Excelsior, Minnesota. Liz, thank you very much for that call. Thanks for taking the time. Thanks for listening and your kind words and your prayers. Really appreciate that. We're going to go now to Mackenzie, who is calling from St. Paul, Minnesota. Mackenzie, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, Kale. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. What's on your mind, Mackenzie?
Well, I was just listening earlier in the program, and I think it was Christine who was actually calling from Minneapolis, so same area here. And she was talking about receiving communion on the tongue and how the bishop has said that's not an option. I had just a couple points that might be helpful for people who prefer to receive on the tongue. Mm-hmm. I myself prefer to receive on the tongue. During COVID, I have been receiving on the hand. Mm-hmm. But a lot of parishes are still offering communion on the tongue if you... Mm-hmm. But it will last in line, and they'll mention that usually. I know that St. Charles Borromeo does that, and St. Anthony, and then the cathedral, I believe, does that as well. Mm-hmm. So if people want to do that, I believe they can. And I don't remember which document it is, but I'm pretty sure there's a document that says that no Catholic can be denied communion on the tongue. So I would suggest if that's what's holding someone back from receiving communion, I don't think Jesus would want that. He would want those who are in a state of grace and are able to receive to do so, and to seek that out if they do prefer to receive on the tongue as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, thanks for mentioning that, Mackenzie. I really appreciate that call. That's a great point. And if it may be possible in some places, but it may not be possible in other places. I know that for me, nobody that I know is allowing that right now. And then you have, what are you going to do? I mean, are you going to fight with the bishop? Are you going to, and maybe, maybe it's worth a phone call to the bishop's office. You know, are they going to change their mind? I don't know. But if you do have that option, yeah, it's great if you're able to take advantage of that. I think it's great. And you know, and I gotta tell you, it's kind of funny. My wife and I were talking about this today. We went to Mass this morning, and the priest, sometimes when you're in the communion line, you get a piece of the large host. It just so happens that, you know, you get a piece of the large altar host. And I don't know. It's the same Christ, you know, no matter whether you're receiving just even a particle of the Eucharist, right? So it doesn't really matter, but it's like, you know, when you receive on the hand, sometimes that can be a problem because there are a lot of crumbs that happen with those pieces of the large host if you were to receive that in the communion line. So I had to be super careful. I did get a piece of the large host, and I had to be super careful no particles fell to the ground. And this is it, you know, and I will, some people think, oh, you're being too scrupulous, you know, this is ridiculous, you know. I don't think so, because, again, the church teaches that even the smallest particle of the host is the entire Christ, body, blood, soul, and divinity. So we do need to have respect for the Eucharist, and hey, I will never say otherwise. That's the great pickup line that enabled my wife to fall in love with me on our first date. I mentioned this, you know, that the smallest particle of the host contains the entire Christ. And she was like, I got to marry this guy. So there you go, fellas, you know, Catholic pickup lines 101. But I sincerely meant it. I sincerely meant it. And so it is true that, you know, if a particle of the host were to accidentally fall to the ground, it's not going to, quote unquote, hurt Jesus, if you will. Like, Jesus isn't going to be harmed by this. However, it can be something that we don't want to happen because we, you know, my wife gave the example, you know, if you have a loved one in the hospital who may be in a coma, yeah, they can't feel anything, but it doesn't mean that, you know, you can step on this person or treat them badly because you need to have respect for the person. And it's the same thing when it comes to the Eucharist. Yes, there have been some terrible instances where the Eucharist has been desecrated. Does it hurt Jesus personally? Well, I mean, I'm sure it makes him sad, of course, but it's a sign of disrespect. It's a sin, especially if somebody knows what they're doing. It can be a very grave sin to be involved in any way with desecration of the Eucharist. So we just, you know, just for all those reasons, there's a lot of reasons why it's preferable for people to receive on the tongue. I do understand why in the pandemic, why they're doing this. Yeah. But I think that sort of hybrid option that you've mentioned, that, you know, if you do want to receive on the tongue, you can do so at the end. I think that seems reasonable to me. That absolutely seems reasonable to me.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, I agree. Yeah, and I think, you know, I've just started receiving on the hand for the first time since I converted before the pandemic, or during the pandemic, I started receiving on the hand for the first time, mm-hmm. and it was really strange for me to do that, mm-hmm. and, mm-hmm. you know, I try to be as reverent as possible. I don't know mm-hmm. if this tip helps people. What I do is go receive on the hand, I consume Jesus, and I keep my hands up. And then when I get back to the pew, I look down at my hands and make yeah. sure there aren't any crumbs. And if there are, then I would consume those, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But I try to be as careful as possible. It's definitely not the way I think. I agree. I would always prefer to receive on the tongue. And it's mm-hmm. strange doing it for the first time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I would just say, you know, if people have the option, even maybe just, you know, calling a parish priest if that's your preference mm-hmm. too, and seeing if there's something, maybe a small communion service or something
yeah.
that can be done to still receive if that's someone's preference.
Yeah, there may be different options in other places. And one other thing, too, is that, you know, and a lot of priests have told me this, that they much prefer to give communion on the tongue. And one of the reasons is, you know, that the person is actually consuming the host. Because unfortunately, there are people out there, and thankfully this is very rare, but there are people who, you know, are involved in satanic cults and they want to collect hosts that they receive from Catholic parishes for that purpose. Now, again, this is rare, thankfully, but you also have people wanting to take Jesus for a walk, if you will. You know, they receive the host and they kind of go on a stroll and the priest can't see whether they've received the host or not. So it's always preferable to, you know, at least from a priest perspective, a lot of priests have told me, it's better to have people receiving on the tongue because you know that they're receiving it. At least you know that. So, But again, the biggest liturgical abuse that I know of is me receiving the Eucharist in the first place. So there you have it. And there you go, right? James says the tongue is a fire.
The grace is probably the first thing.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, listen.
Thank you so much, Cale.
Thank you, Mackenzie. We got to take a quick break right now. Thanks for listening in St. Paul, Minnesota. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show right after this. The Relevant Radio Studio Line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans is available at relevantradio.com/Forester.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the show. So glad you're with me. It is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're going to go to the phones right now. Joseph is calling from Vista, California. Welcome to the show, Joseph. How you doing?
Oh, good. Hi, Cale. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to be talking to you, Joseph.
Oh, God bless you, Cale. You know, I want to, again, just welcome you on. And you have been such a big help to me, Cale. Oh, my goodness. But, oh, you really have. By bringing the sports element, first, well, you talked about, you had Michael Barber on yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Cale, a couple days ago, yeah.
That's the first time I ever had heard about a sport, baseball, anything, where there's an element of God there, of sacredness. And for when I was a lot younger and I had, I was playing as well as going to games, and I thought that I had gotten too involved in it. When I think back to it now, yeah. And but when hearing you talk, you know it. You know you think you're addicted to it, and that it wasn't a good thing. But hearing that, it makes me realize even more that it could be made into a prayer, that it could be done for the salvation of souls, and that there really was something good that could come out of it, that you didn't waste your time. And it's, but it's just, no, but hearing you, even like with hockey, because I know you're from Toronto.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, no, I know how to say it because I grew up with the Flyers, like way, way back in the early, in the mid '60s. You know, and you know, I remember the players and how they talked. And but hearing you just saying that, Cale, I had tickets for the Flyers too for a very, and it's interesting because Bobby Clark got it. His name also is spelled with an E.
That's right.
And, you know, and I just, hearing you just talk about it, and having John Scott on, and just, you know, hearing, it makes me realize that when I was going, splitting seasons, that the prayers, that first of all, that I was there praying, and that I didn't realize, and that it was for the players and their families and the officials and the fans, and hoping that it was done for the restoration and sanctification of souls. And I know I've been going on so much. I'm trying to get everything in, and God bless you for your patience.
Well, Joseph, I want to thank you for that call. That is just a great call. I love your enthusiasm. I am just it just warms my heart that you said those kind words. I really, really appreciate you. That was Joseph in Vista, California. And by the way, Joseph, I got to tell you, since you're a hockey fan, you'll appreciate this. And you mentioned Bobby Clark from the Flyers. When I was a kid, I used to tell people that he was my uncle. Yeah, it didn't really work most of the time. But anyways, yes, from the Broad Street Bullies, Bobby Clark of the great 1970s Flyers teams. And yeah, that's a thing. I think one of the reasons why I like to talk about these things, and really it's no different than talking about other aspects of culture like entertainment, because at the end of the day, sports is entertainment in some ways. Big John Scott, who, of course, played in the NHL for so many teams, and he's just doing so many great things right now as a Catholic convert, really encouraging husbands and fathers to be the men that God has called them to be. He was on the show earlier some weeks ago, and of course, you can look through the archives and find that episode. It was really great. Maybe, Lucas, you can link to that in the show notes or on Twitter. Yeah, that was just such a great episode, and I think, really, it helps to pull in people that wouldn't necessarily listen to religious programming. But if John Scott's going to be on, they'll tune in. And yeah, when Michael Barber was talking about baseball, the spirituality of baseball the other day, I thought that was really enlightening. And we did do a big Twitter poll, which sport was the most spiritual and baseball did win. We did get some interesting responses, though. Somebody, I forgot to mention this to you guys, somebody said pro wrestling is actually the most Catholic sport because it's good versus evil, right? All the storylines and everything. Ugh, it's just a big soap opera. I'm not so sure I'm into that, but I tried to make the case for golf. It didn't really work. However, I don't know. Speaking of golf, did you watch the Masters? Did you watch the Masters on Sunday? Dustin Johnson won, or as we like to call him here in Canada, Mr. Gretzky, because he's for years been dating Wayne Gretzky's daughter, Paulina, and they are engaged. I don't know when they're planning on getting married. Anyways, he did win the Masters, so congratulations to Dustin Johnson. And my friend Todd Aglioloro, I didn't really do this justice the other day, so I think I should revisit this. And by the way, Joseph, thank you very much for that call. I really appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening. That was just a great call. Wow, I feel awesome about that call. Todd Aglioloro, a good friend of mine who is director of publishing at Catholic Answers, he wrote this article some years ago about golf and the cardinal virtues. And just watching the Masters, it just made me think of it once again. And really, he just made so many fun points. He said that, you know, with its complex rubrics, its precious, exotic, single-purpose equipment, just like a sensor. Think about a sensor in the Mass, right? A sand wedge is shiny, it's heavy, it's expensive, and it's useful for one thing only. Silent early morning devotion, right? We have that in golf. We have that in the Catholic Church as well. Those who have a mystical bent tell of the ecstasy of holding out with a short iron, and they liken a missed 2-foot putt to the fiery darts of love. And even non-Christians can chime in as well. Golf's endless and ultimately futile quest for perfection speaks to the Eastern spiritualist, and even the observant Jew might express satisfaction at the redundant complexity of the rules, with a capital R. And Todd says, I myself can confess to having had spiritual experiences on the links. And in fact, in almost any round I play, you'll catch me speaking in tongues, especially after chunking a short approach shot. All right. So you got to look up that article. It was a really good article by Todd Aglioloro on golf and the cardinal virtues. Really, really cool. So yeah, I do think that, as C.S. Lewis wrote about, play is the serious business of heaven. We've talked about that a lot on the show. And I think that's one of the reasons why people are drawn to sports, because they speak to us of something outside of time in a certain sense. And that's why sports like baseball and golf, they don't have a clock. It's not timed. And this is one reason why they do remind us of the spiritual life, because it's, in a sense, got a lot in common with just pure contemplation. Really interesting stuff. So, Joseph in Vista, California, thank you for that call. That was just amazing, amazing, amazing stuff. So, Miley, I got to apologize to you, Miley. I wanted to get your question on the air. I didn't have a chance to get to it, but I promise, I will dip into the mailbag. I know it's Tuesday and it's a Monday mailbag, but I will answer your question tomorrow. So if you're listening out in LA, please tune in tomorrow. I promise I will answer your question. And there's some other things we're going to talk about tomorrow that I can't wait to get into. I'm going to show you how you can biblically defend the sanctity of human life. So if you're listening right now and there's a Bible verse that speaks to the sanctity of life that you really like, that you've used, I want you to call me, call the show, email me, actually, that's even better, kale@relevantradio.com, and we'll try to talk about that tomorrow, try to get that on the air. Because really, when it comes to the pro-life issue, one of the things that you realize, especially in these political climates that we're in right now, is that sometimes we have to defend the sanctity of human life to pure secularists who don't believe in God or say that they don't believe in God. But there are also a number of Christians and even Catholics that do support things like abortion and euthanasia. Obviously, there are Catholics who hold political office who don't exactly agree with the views of the Catholic Church. I'm not going to name names, but I think you know who I might be talking about. So if you're talking to somebody like that, who says that they believe, but they don't believe in the sanctity of human life, you can actually maybe use this biblical point of view, this biblical argument, to defend the sanctity of human life. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. So I do want you to tell me, what are your favorite pro-life verses in the scriptures? You can tweet them at me, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. You can email the show, as I said, cale@relevantradio.com, or you can call in the show tomorrow. So, man, we've run out of time again. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. But I will see you tomorrow on the Faith Explained show. Don't forget, you can always download those episodes. We're going through the book of Revelation right now. I was really excited to see the reading from Revelation today at Mass. And I actually did the reading today, so that was kind of fun for me. So check out our series on the book of Revelation on the Faith Explained show. And we'll be back with more of the Cale Clark show tomorrow. Lucas Holt, still rocking the AOL email address he produced on his antiquated equipment.
You two Patrick characters are going to Top Gun.
Yep, we are. We did it. Michaela, take it away.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.